Yeah, they've gotten 180,000 reservations refundable. Like one of those is me. I don't. We'll see if I go through with it. It's
didn't you reserve a Rivian R2 as well? How many EVs are you gonna have?
Yeah. Oh, I'm gonna have them all. Hello and welcome back to the Plugged In podcast, a weekly news show from Inside EVs, all about the future of transportation. I'm Tim Levin. This week, we're talking all about the Slate truck. This funky little vehicle now has a price tag. It has a new range number. It has a new battery. And I got to spend some time in LA this week, both riding in the pickup and talking to Slate executives all about what they've built. And today we're going to talk about America's newest EV startup and whether it can work, whether this novel business model can be a success. And here to discuss with me, filling in for Mac, who is on vacation doing something lame like spending time with his family, is Inside EV staff writer Suvrath Kothari. Suvrath, thanks so much for coming back to the show.
Hey, Tim. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a while since I've been on here. You guys don't like having me anymore, I guess. I'm joking. It's always good to be here.
We don't take enough vacations. That's the thing.
I guess so, yeah.
I'll gladly have you fill in more. All right, before we get into Slate, a word from our sponsor. This episode of the Plugged In podcast from Inside EVs is presented by Hankook Tire and their EV-exclusive Ion Tire lineup. This summer, Hankook is the sponsor of the Demo Days Festival, where you can test drive cars ranging from EVs, hybrids, and even ICE cars as part of North America's leading EV and electric mobility event. Go to demodaysfestival.com to find out about upcoming Demo Days festivals near you. And stay tuned to Inside EVs for exciting content presented by Hankook Ion. All right, back to the show. So I'm sure most people, probably everybody listening to this show, knows the basics of Slate. But I will just recap real quick. Slate came out of stealth about a year ago with this bold promise to make a radically simple, radically customizable, ultra cheap EV that's really been missing from the American car market. I probably don't need to tell you that cars have gotten crazy expensive, like hovering around close to $50,000. Trucks have gotten big and unwieldy. There's a lot of tech that bugs people. And I think all of that is why Slate made such a big splash. It like really struck a nerve when they first unveiled this whole plan last year to make this thing that like has none of that and is super basic. But the pricing has always been a question mark, right? Like they advertised mid-20s before the tax credit. They advertised under 20,000. And like since then, especially since the tax credit went away, we've all been wondering, okay, like this is a really interesting idea, but what price does it come in at? What did you think? In your mind, did you have a prediction for what the price was going to be?
Yeah, I mean, they've been saying mid-20,000s ever since the tax credit went away, right? So I don't think it's that big of a jump, honestly, going from, say, 19 or 20,000 to now 24,950 before destination. It's still like half of what the average new car in the US costs, which is like $50,000.
Yeah. I think I was pleasantly surprised. Well, so you said it. The price, as people probably know by the time they're listening to this, $24,950 for the blank slate for this basic truck with none of the add-ons. That makes it both America's cheapest EV and the country's cheapest pickup truck, period. It undercuts the Ford Maverick by a couple grand, at least in terms of like retail price before any incentives. I was pleasantly surprised, and I think a lot of other people were too, because when you hear mid-20s, I expected they would stretch that as high as they possibly could, right? Like it would be 27,499 or something, especially when, you know, it was supposed to be sub 20 with the tax credit. So I assumed it was like 27 something. But no, it's $24,950, $25,000. And there's like basically no vehicles. I mean, there's a few. There's only a small handful of vehicles in America that cost less than $25,000.
Yeah, it's absolutely. I think it's very uniquely positioned in that price range. And Yeah, you're right. You don't have pickup trucks, which cost in the mid-20s right now. So yeah. I think it's definitely unique. One thing I want to note is that the Ford Maverick, yes, it's a bit more expensive. It starts officially around 28, 29, but Ford keeps doing these employee pricing things, which, so right now the Maverick I checked was 26 before destination, which makes the slate looks, yeah, it makes you think how much of a value it really is, because the Maverick is not stripped down. It does get powered windows. It does get an infotainment screen, all the creature comforts you expect.
Yeah, five seats, four doors, like all the normal car stuff that you take for granted in a car. So I'll run through some of the basics. You now get 205 miles of range. We'll talk a little bit more about this and like whether it's enough, but this is different from when they first announced it. 205 miles of range, 120 kilowatt DC fast charging. They say 20% to 80% in about 30 minutes. It is rear-wheel drive with 181 horsepower, and pre-orders are open now for $300. Production starts in Q4 at Slate's factory in Indiana. So now we like have the full picture of this, or most of the full picture of the Slate truck and what you actually get for that mid-20s price.
Right, absolutely. I think we've been waiting for this for a long time. There's a bunch we have to cover. I can't really.
Yeah.
I was on the. I know we'll talk about this later, but I was on the configurator early this morning, and I just could not stop like putting things on it. Like it's definitely addictive. But yeah, Tim, you rode in the Slate truck, right? So tell us more about what did you think? What did you learn? Who did you speak to?
Yeah, this was really fun. I saw it for the first time last April when they first unveiled it. I got to spend like a little bit of time with it. And this time I went down to LA. I got to see more of the trucks all in one space. I got to actually like ride in one. So I got kind of a better picture of the Slate. I think overall, like I'm really charmed by this. I think we'll talk more about the price and the whole proposition and whether this can work. I guess spoiler alert, like I do think this will appeal to a lot of people in terms of the basicness of it, the super simple, super cheap, and also crazy customizable. I think the blank slate, you know, with no options, very basic on the inside, right? Like it is a lot of hard gray plastic, but it's also not like trying to be more than it is. It's not like they went with all this cheap materials and then tried to make it like feel fancy with, you know, shiny stuff or whatever. It just feels very kind of authentic and like it's not trying to be more than it is, which I appreciated.
I was kind of curious, did they have one of those decked up, like wrapped up Slate trucks also at the event?
Yeah, so they had a blank slate. And then they also had one that they called like fully loaded or something or tricked out. And we can put up some photos or some B-roll of that. It was this like multicolored SUV kit one. So you can transform it into the SUV. This thing they said would cost about $35,000. So it has like a lift kit, bigger wheels, bunch of different interior components that you can, swap in like different colors, nicer seats. All that kind of stuff. And that was pretty nice too. Like I still wouldn't say it was, I mean, $35,000 is still way less than the average price of a new vehicle. I can't say I was like blown away by the interior finishes. You know, it wasn't like really premium or luxury level, but it's also not priced like that. It was interesting. It was nice that you can spend a little bit of extra money, or a lot of extra money if you want, and like choose all these different, you know, add-ons. But let me talk about the ride because I got a quick ride in it. It was like 10 minutes. I was sitting shotgun with a Slate propulsion engineer, and like there's only so much you can learn from a very quick test ride. I'm really looking forward to actually driving it. But overall, I was impressed. Like, it was way quicker than I expected. I think you, you know, I imagined a $25,000 super basic 180 horsepower single motor, you know, vehicle, and
one hole. Which weighs like 4,000 pounds.
Yeah,
so it's,
right.
It's not lightweight.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know. I didn't expect it to be bad, but I just expected it to be, you know, the bare minimum, I guess. No, it's like pretty. It's exactly what you'd expect from an EV. It's pretty quick. It seemed like pretty powerful off the line, like lots of low end torque, all the kind of zippy like EV qualities that you'd expect, and the ride was pretty good. Like, again, it wasn't cushy, but it also wasn't, there was nothing wrong with it. It wasn't overly harsh. It was like a little bit firm at times, but basically it rode pretty well over all these like nasty LA roads.
And these were still prototypes, right? The ones you drove.
Yeah, this was
so
designed.
So they could still fine tune the suspension.
Yeah, it was a design validation build. So this was production like intent. Built at the factory. But overall, like I think it felt really solid. It didn't, as far as early prototype vehicles go, I was impressed.
That's what I think the vast majority of reviews out there also say something similar, that it's like don't be fooled by 180 horsepower and 0 to 60 in whatever 8 seconds is what they're claiming.
Yeah.
Most people are saying that it's pretty peppy and it retains those core EV characteristics that people really love, which is that instant torque and smoothness.
I think people are going to have a lot of fun in it. Like, I think people and I say the same thing about Nissan Leaf or Chevy Bolt, like these other cars that they're not like the fastest EVs on the planet. But if you're coming from a gas car, you're going to have a lot of fun just like ripping around town in this thing. I think the Slate's going to be similar.
Absolutely. Oh my God, I love the Leaf. When I first got it last year, it just spins up its front wheels when you floor the throttle, and it's just so much fun. So it's good to see that the Slate is also going to be fun to drive.
Yeah.
You want to talk a little bit more about the battery? I know you mentioned that the range is about $200 miles. So can you say more there?
Yeah. So this is probably like the biggest piece of news out of the event is 205 miles. This is both more and less than Slate initially promised, right? At the outset, they said the blank Slate would have 150 miles of estimated range, and that there would be this bigger battery option that would give you 240 miles of range. They since then completely like went back to the drawing board with their battery strategy, and now the Slate has an LFP pack, 65 kilowatt hour lithium iron phosphate pack, which is interesting for a few reasons, right? They originally didn't do this. I asked their then CEO when they first unveiled it, I was like, why not LFP for a cheap, like for an affordable vehicle, like LFP batteries are cheaper. The reason at the time, in part at least, was the EV tax credit, right? If you wanted to qualify for the EV tax credit as a manufacturer, you had to meet all these requirements around where your batteries came from, where the minerals came from.
Right.
A lot of it had to be domestically sourced or sourced from US like close trading partners, and China could not have anything to do with it. And so they went with NMC cells from SK because there just wasn't a lot of LFP production in America. And we know that it's heavily like concentrated in China, the supply chain.
Right. That's the dominant battery chemistry in China.
Yeah, dominant. Yeah, exactly. Dominant battery chemistry in the world. But EV tax credit went away, and that they told me gave them the opportunity to basically reconsider this and say, hey, actually, why don't we choose this cheaper chemistry? So they switched. They went to LFP. It's coming from this Chinese company called Goshen that is going to make the batteries in America. And it allowed them to go for cell to pack So prismatic LFP cells, all stacked up in the pack, no modules. And now this is the only pack you get because it takes up the whole space of the vehicle, right? LFP,
right?
A little bit less energy dense than NMC. And so to get that 205 miles, they had to stuff all the space in the floor that was available with batteries. It means you can't do a 240 or 250 mile pack without doing a different chemistry. So that's kind of how that all played out.
So they sort of landed somewhere in between. So 150 miles was their original estimate for the smaller battery and then 240 for the bigger one. So they're at 205 or 204 now, which, I mean, owners, customers will decide if that is adequate or not for them. But I think it's a smart move from Slate to go the LFP route because, like you said before, it's a dominant battery chemistry in the world. There are a lot of advantages to having LFP. It's lower cost. And because they're doing cell-to-pack, it's something a lot of automakers are also doing because cell-to-pack basically allows you to remove a lot of structural complexities in a battery pack. So having your cells installed directly in one pack and then mounting it on your floor, sort of you reduce the weight. And that's also how you offset some of that energy density because you can cram in more cells, more LFP cells. So that's definitely a smart move. And Gotion, the battery supplier, is a very big player in China. It's one of the big battery manufacturers. And this battery is going to be made in the U.S., right, in Illinois. Gotion has a big $2 billion plant, which mainly produces energy storage batteries. But I think it looks like they're building some EV battery capacity too.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like not, I mean, the way it was told to me, it helps that it's close. It's one state over from where they're building the trucks. That helps them save on logistics costs. Overall, the battery pack is just cheaper than it would have been. And I have to wonder whether, I mean, there's a few things at play here. I don't think it's 100% tax credit related. I think they also said that when they were first planning like the truck, there just wasn't real availability of LFP in the way that they wanted. They even said that Gotion at the time, like they were talking to them and Gotion didn't have the capacity that they needed. So the industry has kind of evolved in a way that lets them do this. I also wonder whether it has to do with the tax credit in another way, which is like, okay, tax credit goes away. Your sub $20,000 truck is now mid 20s.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they realized, okay, people might accept a 150 mile range in a truck that's $19,000 or $20,000. But if we have to sell it for 25, like 150 becomes a much different proposition.
That's definitely a hard sell. Yeah.
And so I think they probably were like, okay, now that we have to sell it at a higher price, we need to offer a little bit more as well. That's just my that's just what I think.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. It's interesting that you mentioned that for them having their battery supplier very close to where they're going to make the cars, it's sort of important. Because I mean, I've spoken to a lot of like battery executives. I was at this GM conference in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago, and that's exactly what Kurt Kelty, who's the head of GM's battery and sustainability, he told me that the ultimate goal was like having all your suppliers very close to you because that not only helps with logistics, it also helps with innovation. And we all know that, you know, EV is a sector where innovation is very important and we're lagging behind China. And if proximity is one of the things that will help with it.
Yeah, interesting. Let's talk more about the range because
yes,
this is a big question mark. Like, I think there are a few ways that the Slate is just a big test of America's car market, right? Like, people have been complaining about affordability. EV adoption is not trending in the right direction. It's not trending as up as quickly as it was. There's this whole customization thing that Slate is trying out. And so it's like, is this is this going to fit this moment? And I think the range is not everything, but it is a big part of how people choose EVs. So what do you, I mean, 205 miles. When I first walked into the room at the Slate thing, I saw on a banner 205 miles for the base one. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. I bet that means that the extended pack is going to be 300. But no, I was wrong. It's 200. It's 205 for the truck. They're not talking about the SUV yet, although last year, the chief engineer or the head engineer told me that, yeah, the SUV kits will probably add a little bit of range just because the aero is a little bit smoother going over, you know, the
But they
body
also add
shape.
A little bit of weight, right? Because of the body kit.
That's what he said. So that's what he said. Yeah. He said a little more. Yeah. So, but 205 miles, what do you think? Is this enough? Like, does this fit the 25K price point?
That's an interesting question because personally, I think the US broadly is not ready for a low-range EV, especially when you consider where the rest of the market is headed, right? The Nissan Leaf is, even the base variant, which starts at around $30,000, is now more than 300 miles. So even though people don't use their EVs all that much in terms of like hypermiling them or using all that range on a daily basis, it's more of a psychological barrier. It's more of a nice to have. But with this LFP battery, I think it's not all that bad. I'll be honest, like even when I saw the 200 mile figure for the first time, I was like, I squibbled a little bit in my seat and I was like, this might not work, but LFP will help you with that because then LFP batteries don't degrade the same way NMC batteries do when you fully charge on a regular basis to 100%. Mm-hmm. So owners can charge to 100% every day and have 90% of usable energy, which translates to about 185 miles of usable range, which is not all that
bad. You mean
bad
like
if you think
you can charge
it.
To 100%, and then if you're going somewhere, like you want to realistically get there with like 10%, so you have all of that available. Versus in the old NMC one, even like let's say the 240 mile NMC pack. If you only are really charging it up to 80%, it's probably roughly a similar usable mileage.
Absolutely. It's in the same ballpark.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I will say on its face, 205 miles startled me a little bit. And then I think I needed to take a step back and remember that, yes, this is a $25,000 truck. There is no direct comparison to that. There are a bunch of EVs that I wouldn't call them amazing deals, but there are a bunch of EVs that do a little over 200, 220, 230, that kind of thing in the 30,000s. And when you look at it from that perspective, like the cheapest EV having, a range that's a little lower than a lot of the competition, I think it does start to make sense. And I'll say Slate, like they've done whatever their customer research is. They think this is plenty. They think there's a big market for this sort of thing, for a truck that's $25,000 and does 205 miles of range. They quote the figure that all EV like nerds have heard, which is that the average American drives like 40 miles a day. So realistically, this would probably cover most people's driving for several days. Do think though, people don't buy EVs like that, you know? People buy for that trip that maybe happens a few times a year. And realistically, you don't have to be planning a cross-country road trip for 205 miles to be like not quite enough.
Yeah, and I also think that this is not going to be a primary vehicle for the vast majority of buyers, right? They probably have a car in their garage which is either a hybrid or a longer range EV or a gas car, which they can always use for their longer road trips. So, 205 miles it's not the best, but it's definitely not the worst. I think the bigger problem here is not having native inbuilt route planning because I can totally see a 200 mile EV work way better maybe 2 or 3 or 4 years down the line when EV adoption rates in the US are like at maybe 20% or 25%, and there are chargers everywhere, and owners realize that they don't need all that range. Maybe at that point in time, this would be a more acceptable range. At this point, you need to have more inbuilt software that's going to tell you where to charge.
I think they will have something like that. They just don't have a screen, but they will have an app that will have navigation. Yeah. And so we just don't really know like how it'll work yet, but they do have some sort of navigation solution.
Interesting. Should we move to the other big thing on the Slate truck, which is accessories? Because that's one of the big selling points too, right?
Yeah, and I think it ties in nicely because I think where the range thing sort of starts to unravel a little bit for me, and again, like, I really like the Slate, and I'm interrogating my own, like, opinions here because I would love to buy one. I just think it's a cool vehicle. I'm thinking, could I make 205 miles work for me? Can I, like, get past that psychological sort of barrier? And yeah, like, maybe I can. Maybe, okay, you have the really cool Slate that's super customizable and awesome and changes with your life. But yeah, when you drive to wherever that, like, a few times a year, sorry, it's going to take an extra hour of charging. Like, if I'm thinking that, there may be other people out there who are like thinking the same way, where they're like, this is a really interesting, novel product. And
yeah,
maybe I'll be more accepting of, or it's novel, but also, you know, costs less than any other new EV. So maybe I'll be more accepting of these stats. I think where it ties in with the accessories is like the SUV kit, right? This is one of the coolest parts of the Slate. One of the most like unique parts of the Slate is that you can buy the two-door truck and then you can upgrade it to an SUV, these two different SUV body styles. Personally, that's really appealing to me. 25K for the truck, and then you have kids or a dog or whatever later on in life and you can expand it. That's a really interesting idea.
Yeah.
However, the boxy SUV costs $5,000. The fastback costs $7,000. And that's when the range thing starts to get a little trickier because you're talking about now a small crossover with crank windows and all the nothing that Slate offers for around the same price as like a Chevy Bolt or a Nissan Leaf that does have a bunch of stuff and has a lot more range.
Right. I mean, with those cars, you get so much more, better software, better interior. That's going to be a hard sell, but you can also not convert your Chevy Bolt into a pickup truck or an SUV, which you can with the Slate truck.
That's the thing. It's like, you know, okay, so the SUV will cost about the same as a Leaf.
Yeah.
But it's also cooler than a, like, it's a more interesting vehicle than a Leaf, and it can change over time and all that cool stuff. So all that to say, the Slate is really tough to pin down because it's never been done before. But yeah, let's talk about accessories. You know, this is kind of one of the big, this is the central selling point of the truck is the fact that it has this huge marketplace of accessories. Now we actually know how much some of those cost. Were there any that stuck out to you in terms of, you want to like rattle off some of these?
Yeah, I mean, we knew that they showed off some of the accessories before, but now we have the whole range. I mean, there are like dozens of like roof rack options and whatnot. What I really loved was some of their signature starter packs because it's good thinking from them because not everybody is going to want to spend hours and hours configuring their truck, right? They probably want something which will give them a good base, and they have, so Slate has some
of their... Not everybody is a plugged-in podcast listener. Those people will be spending a few hours on this configurator, I guarantee it.
Not everybody's a hardcore nerd, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So they have like more than 30 signature starter packs, and I thought some of them were really cool because I spent hours and hours trying to build my own truck this morning. But in the end, I was like, screw this. I'm just going to pick one of the signature ones because they do look cool. So they have one, my personal favorite is one, what they call the Retrograde. It's basically like a fastback body style. And there's a glossy black half paint. So the upper half of the car is glossy black. And then at the bottom, you have this sort of warm colors, sun-themed wrap called the Sunseeker. We can maybe throw a photo in here. And that one looked really cool. And there are like more than 30 of these. And you can do like so many different permutations and combinations with the wraps and the vinyls and the decals.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any other manufacturer in the US which offers this right now.
No. And that's their kind of pitch is like no trim packages or, you know, no trims, no options packages, no, you have to, if you want this, you have to buy that. It's very much a la carte. Like light covers, $50, these little like templates that stick over your front or rear lights and like add a design to it. Also pricier stuff like animated tail lamps for $500 that you can install yourself or have somebody else install. A Bluetooth speaker for the center console, I think is going to be very popular.
Absolutely.
That costs $250 for central one. And then there are these like auxiliary side, you know, you can get another left and a right for $150 each. Wraps start at full vehicle wraps around $500. One thing that I learned at the event that I was not clear on is that because the slate is made of this plastic, you know, it's like a composite body. They
the body
say that
panels,
you
mean?
Yeah. They say that you have to buy one of their wraps and that you can't just buy an off the shelf wrap. It won't like stick right. Something to note if you're in the market for one of these things. But wraps start around $500. You can also get like partial wraps for less than that. That'll just do, you know, the roof or different parts of it. There's all these decals for like $60, $100, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
A bunch of different upgrades for the interior. So the dash comes in this kind of drab, like blank slate gray. You can change it up to, you know, there's probably like a dozen different colors. You can buy a set of those dash panels for $60. So there's all these like pretty low cost ways to kind of spice it up. And then also like much more expensive, you know,
yeah,
more expensive, more involved stuff that costs a few hundred or like $1,000.
It's interesting that the vast majority of this stuff is under $500. Because if the truck starts at 25 grand, and if you're really cost conscious, maybe you can choose a few things that are very important to you. Say, for example, the tablet mount or the speaker, or you know, something else on the exterior, and then that would make a lot of sense. But also, you can like if you go completely nuts, these costs can compound and amplify, and you could end up spending thousands and thousands of dollars more.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, that's kind of all the new stuff, or a lot of the new stuff we learned about the slate. I guess, you know, we've covered it a little bit, but like big picture, what are your kind of big takeaways? You know, this is historically not a great time to be launching a new EV company. It's like tough times out there for EVs. On the other hand, it's also a great time to be launching potentially a very cheap vehicle, and something that sort of hits a price point that has pretty much been forgotten. It's going to be a really interesting test of what Americans, like what car buyers actually want. Like, will they go for a very cheap vehicle? Will this whole customization thing be appealing? What do you think based on sort of what we know now?
I sort of agree with you that the timing is good because it's a down year for EVs. We've been hearing all the sort of negative news about EVs since the tax credits rolled back, and then the fuel emissions, fuel economy norms have been gone, and then the sales have sort of reset. So it's definitely a refreshing and sort of a very positive development, I think. And it's so awesome unique.
From our perspective, right? To be covering a car that like is getting made and exists rather than all the cars that are getting canceled. It's very exciting for us.
Yeah, it's rare. Like since the beginning of this year, this EV graveyard, the number of vehicles that have been canceled, it's huge, right? But yeah. the number of new vehicles is relatively smaller. But also, I think this customization approach is sort of unique because which cars do you get to customize to such granular levels of details? These are usually like the extremely expensive Rolls Royces or the Cadillac Celestiqs, but now you get a little bit of that experience in an affordable EV. But it's from a new company. Of course, they'll have to earn their trust. But I think it's a positive development, a refreshing new addition to the EV market.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
I'm still processing, but I think a lot of people, like I said, I think a lot of it is unknown.
Yeah.
It's a different type of vehicle than we've seen before. But I also do think that there are going to be a lot of people who are enamored by this thing, either because they want the absolute cheapest EV. Maybe they have another car. Maybe they don't. Maybe they're replacing, like all these people around me have like a Nissan, like an old Nissan Leaf or an old i3 or something that doesn't have a ton of range, but they like using it to just get around and do short trips. I think that's a really appealing space for that. I also think the customization thing could blow up. Like, I think people could really, people might start seeing these things around and they see exactly what you said, how granular you can get, how you can make it like exactly what you want. And that's just like a new cool idea. So I think that also has some power. It'll be really, really interesting to see because this is also, you know, it's hard to build a new EV startup, right? We've seen the others, Rivian, Lucid, like they lose money for ages. It's hard to get people to buy your vehicles, even if they are good when you're a new brand. So, you know, they've gotten 180,000 reservations refundable. Like one of those is me. We'll see if I go through with it.
Didn't you reserve a Rivian R2 as well? How many EVs are you going to have?
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to have them all. No, but for real, like you bring up the R2. The R2 is, it looks great, but it's $60,000 right now.
Yeah, it's so expensive. Yeah.
This is one that, like, I'm a cheap bastard and I am going to drive my 2010 Forester that I got for $7,000 until the wheels fall off. But the slate is kind of exactly built for somebody like me. Like, I don't make a ton of money, but this is the first new car in a while that I can realistically see myself wanting and also affording, like something that's really cheap and also really has a desirability to it, for all the reasons we've discussed. Like it's cheap, but also has some soul.
Has so
to
much
it
personality. And, yeah, it has a lot of personality.
Exactly.
It's
not a Mitsubishi Mirage, you know.
Oh my God! Yeah, definitely not. Yeah, it's not pedestrian. It's not one of those boring cars. So I think there are two things that work in the favor of the Slate truck. One is that it's a pickup truck, and pickup trucks are extremely popular in the US. They're some of the best-selling vehicles in the country. And the other thing is we're really starved for affordable vehicles in the market right now, not just affordable EVs, but like affordable cars in general. And those are the two things that Slate has taken care of. Now, what I'm curious about next is how this truck will be used. Will it be used like more of a lifestyle vehicle where you go for your groceries or short trips or just go to work or gym or whatever, or do more long trips, do more work truck stuff, heavy duty stuff, haul cargo, tow things. So that's the sort of usability I'm very curious about, how customers will end up using the truck.
Yeah, I think on the small affordable truck thing, you look at the Maverick, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but that thing came out, whatever it was, 5 years ago. And it was also a little bit of a gamble. Like they hadn't, there hadn't been a really compact pickup truck in America for a long time. And they came out with this and it sells super well. Like it is really
it's
popular.
Everywhere.
Yeah, it started out at like $20,000. That was, I think, somewhat short-lived. Now it's like mid to high 20s. But yeah, you see them everywhere. People want this sort of, people want a truck, but not a giant one and not a really expensive one. So I think that makes a lot of sense. I think we're going to see this in a lot of fleets. I think if you are a small business or a city fleet and you're a customer that's really just focused on like cost per mile. And you're not thinking about like, these aren't the kinds of customers who plan around, oh, well, what if I finally take that road trip to the Grand Canyon someday? These are people who think about, okay, my route is whatever it is, 150 miles a day. Does this work? How much does it cost? And I think this will probably be pretty appealing for those people.
Yeah, I agree with you. For fleet customers, especially, when you have a fixed distance, you know you're going to cover every day. And if you're going to return to the same depot every day, which has a charging station, it will make a lot of economic sense. I mean, it's similar what we see with delivery vans, right? Like the Rivian EDVs, for example, they're everywhere now. I see them in New York City everywhere. So it makes a lot of sense for fleet customers. We'll see how it gets adopted over time.
Yeah, I think one thing that we should wrap up here. Let us know in the comments what you think about the slate, what we didn't cover, and if there's any questions I can answer or we can answer on a future episode. I learned something interesting about the slate business model, which I thought was kind of fascinating. And I don't know exactly how they calculate these numbers, but they told me that even the blank slate has margin. So when they sell that truck for $25,000, they're building it for less than that. It's not like a loss leader that they're hoping you buy. I mean, obviously they are hoping you buy accessories and all that, but the blank slate has positive margin. They also said that they expect to be cash flow positive next year, meaning, you know, they're bringing in more than they're spending and they can sort of sustain on the revenue that they're bringing in.
Did they say how many units they have to sell?
They didn't say how many units. I asked that.
Okay.
Car companies don't like talking about future product. They don't like talking about sales, you know, predictions. unless it's Tesla predicting 250,000 Cybertrucks. What they do say is the plant, when it's running at full steam, it will be able to produce 150,000 trucks a year. They didn't say that's what will get them to this cash flow positive. I don't believe they would be ramped up fully next year, but that's when they say they'll be cash flow positive. And it's wild when you consider that several years into selling vehicles, Rivian and Lucid are still burning tons of cash. Like Lucid, we'll talk in a sec about the tribulations of Lucid, but they still are taking in investor money, right? So it would be really remarkable if Slate could pull that off and be like a sustainable business that quickly.
Yeah, I'm curious what their risk appetite is. I'm curious like how long they plan to keep burning cash before they do some broader structural changes. But the fact that you mentioned it's coming next year is going to have more competition as well, right? Because next year you have the Ford Universal EV truck, the $30,000 truck, which is also going to come out. I'm assuming it's not going to be as bare bones as the Slate truck. But I mean, having more options is great, but it's not going to be easy for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. More competition is definitely coming. And that Ford one is a big one. All right. I think we basically covered everything about Slate. Again, really interesting. Really don't know where it's going to go, but excited to see what happens next. let's do plus minus, our segment where we talk about who's up and who's down in the EV world this week. Suvrath, you are our guest. Who is your winner or loser of the week?
Oh, I think we both have losers this week. My minus is the Ford Mustang Mach-E, which won't be moving to the next generation universal EV platform. Apparently, this detail was out there for quite a while. It was hidden in one of the FAQ sections on Ford's website. That kind of sucks because I love the Mach-E. It's such a great car to drive. It's been one of the better selling electric crossovers. And the fact that it's probably not going to move to a next generation is kind of sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. No, we don't know. Like, just to underscore, just because it's not on the UEV platform, they could come out with like a next generation based on the current, you know, based on some other architecture. That's possible, but
that's possible. Jim Farley has, we don't know.
Jim Farley has also talked about the fact that the F-150 and the Mach-E like weren't engineered properly, right? He's talked about how they like missed the mark a little bit on engineering those, didn't do some of the blank slate, you know, clean sheet sort of stuff that Tesla did. And that's what they're trying to do with the UEV platform. So that platform we know will probably have an SUV and have a whole range of vehicles someday, but
it'll be a family.
Apparently a future Mustang may not be one of them.
Right. And what is your plus or minus?
I have a minus two, bummer. After all the good kind of interesting news of Slate, Lucid cut 18% of its staff this week after cutting 12% earlier this year. This is happening. And they also this week, part of the same announcement, they cut production at their Arizona factory. Mark Winterhoff, the COO, who also was the interim CEO for the last long while, is also out. This is all happening as a new CEO takes the reins and, you know, is apparently restructuring to try to put the company in a better financial position. But it's a tough time for Lucid. And like we talk about all the time, they make really great vehicles. It just seems that the business is, struggling a bit right now.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like that. Multiple levels of like management shakeups and, you know, you said two rounds of layoffs. I'm not as positive about Lucid as I am about Rivian, because Rivian already has the R2 out. They have their electric delivery vans out. They have this whole burgeoning software business with their Volkswagen partnership. We'll have to see how Lucid turns out. They do have the upcoming midsize crossover, which they say is going to be fully revealed by the end of this year. And maybe that will help them really scale and reduce their losses.
Yeah, that's definitely the plan. That's definitely what they're hoping for. We'll see if this new CEO can make that happen. All right, thanks for listening to the Plugged In podcast from Inside EVs. We are off next Friday for the July 4th long weekend, but we'll be back the week after that. Today's show is produced by Michael Perkins and is brought to you by the Motorsport Network. Make sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to the Inside EVs YouTube channel and check out all our latest coverage on InsideEVs.com. And drop your comments below if you want us to answer any questions on the show. See you next time.